Hi, my name is Jason Hall. I'm the president of AMCO, or the American Master Chef's Order. Some history on AMCO. It was formed in 2014 by a group of master chefs, including Bill Franklin, who spearheaded this concept. The idea was to look at the brand, see how we can further develop it and develop the exam going forward to meet ever-changing needs within the industry, to offer a coming together of our guild once you've passed the exam on the other side, and then also to start to develop the training and support needed for candidates as they approach the exam. Our mission is to promote, sustain, and perfect our craft, all while identifying and supporting and inspiring the next generation of candidates as they progress towards becoming an American Master Chef. You can reach us and see more information on our website at AmericanMasterChefsOrder.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to the AMCO podcast. This week, we're going to start diving into some preparation for the exam. And to kick off the series, we're going to be speaking with MasterChef Jason Hall as we dive into a series of discussions that will present the candidates who are looking at taking the test with some ideas for preparation and approach at taking the test. The series will continue with some discussions of other master chefs who have successfully taken the exam. But in this first part, Master Chef Hall and I are going to discuss what he calls the CMC pre-plan. Chef Hall put this together in just after he had failed the test in 2010 and then went on to successfully pass in 2012. So welcome back. We hope you enjoy. A few years ago, when I was getting ready to take the test, I had the pleasure of being turned to you. And actually, I think that's how we started to get to know each other. I reached out to you and said I was considering taking the MasterChef exam. I wasn't considering. I was going to take the MasterChef exam. And I heard you had a PowerPoint.
It was, you know, it was kind of by accident that this thing was developed. I took the exam in 2010 with a really strong group. Unfortunately, I didn't make it through that round. Spent just under 2 years studying and replanning and rethinking, you know, kind of just looking at my entire program from a different angle. You know, really dissecting it, taking it apart, putting it back together, finding where I was strong, making those stronger, finding where I was weak, making those points stronger. And so through my success in 2012, it wasn't long before, you know, I started to get some emails that came in and said, you know, we watched you take it both times, or, you know, we were there, or we saw that you passed and we would like some information, or, you know, would you mind assisting me to get prepared for the exam? So it really started with just general conversations like that. And one chef in particular, Alex Darvishi, after I passed the exam in 2012, probably emailed with me, you know, at least 1 to 2 times a week. And it was great because it let me stay fresh and think about everything that I had, you know, done, and really let me realize how much I had grown between the two exams. Right. Yeah, exactly. It let me track what information I was giving. It let me kind of step back from, you know, the actual exam of being a part of it and really look at and analyze what I had done and how I had changed it. And so through Alex and I's conversations, I actually renamed that folder of emails and questions and answers. And I think I told him this once. I called it the Darvishi files, because there was so much information that we passed back and forth, and questions that he would ask that I thought, hey, that was a question that I had at one point through my preparations for the test. And you know, long story short, cut to several years later, and I was moving to Charlotte, North Carolina to take a job, and I had a couple of chefs reach out to me from Central Piedmont Community College, who were colleagues of mine, and they said, you know, we would like you to come and talk to us about the test. And so I thought, well, hey, I have this great little file. Let me turn this into a PowerPoint, obviously, so I can walk through this whole thing. And so that's kind of how this CMC pre-plan was born. And went to the school, talked to them at length about the, you know, the preparation and really more so about the organization and what you kind of have to put in from yourself, aside from the food. I mean, we know that you have to cook on a very high level and stay organized, etc. But I felt like there was a whole nother story to be told kind of along with that.
When you were telling me about a lot of the pre-planning, it was kind of the first time I'd heard so much of it. But the concepts of using a sous chef, and a lot of the concepts you're going to talk about today, actually all the concepts you're going to talk about today, helped me out tremendously and made the whole process seem manageable. Maybe not the right word for it, but I understood the value of having a sous chef, and it eased my mind and took away a lot of the questions of like, well, how am I going to eat?
Right.
Or am I going to eat? And the moment you said, get yourself a sous chef, it instantly clicked in my head like, Jesus, why wouldn't I? I can't have a sous chef in the kitchen, but why wouldn't I have somebody helping me outside of the kitchen so that I can focus on the tasks that I would, just like I would use an administrative assistant or a secretary or a sous chef in the kitchen.
Correct. And that was just based off of experience. When I took it in 2010, I did not have that other person to help me outside of the test every single day. I flew solo. And so, you know, on those days where you're bringing, you know, two totes plus a platter into the school, you know, sometimes by the time you even get your stuff in, which in 12, that was at CIA, and it was, you know, it was cold. It was actually, there was snow on the ground. So I was hiking my stuff up a snowy walkway, as many have prior to me. And by the time I got everything inside, then cleaning off the snow and then moving it in, you know, you've already exerted a certain percentage of energy. And when I sat down after 2010 was over and started to look at where could I have been stronger, it was little things like that that started to click, because I hadn't at that time thought of bringing anybody, but I had seen others who did, who had an assistant. You know, Rich and some of the other guys had another person who just helped transport things for them. And so I thought, you know, if I could really take that other person to the next level, how much more time while I'm at this exam can I actually apply to the exam, as opposed to, you know, thinking about moving things from A to B or driving and being stressed because somebody pulled out in front of you. I tried to take all of that out so I could just, you know, really submerge myself in, you know, in the exam. And, you know, so the question became, you know, who is that person, and how immersed in this exam do they have to be as well in order to benefit you and to become strong? And so, you know, it needs to be, in my opinion, a sous chef that has worked closely with you, that knows your style, because there's going to be lots of things that are very second nature for you as your program becomes strong. That they also kind of have to identify with, or should identify with, in order to give you, you know, exactly what you want. And so as I started to expand that assistant position, you know, I started to cook with different members of my staff at the club, and identified one who was eager, who that's a path that he is still currently on, and, you know, thought this is exactly what I need. I'm going to build basically a job description for what I can utilize this person for. Obviously, they can't come into the kitchen, but there's a lot of stuff that they can help with. And again, it was a lot of experience of what didn't work in the first time and what I needed to have really tight for me to be focused and completely immersed in my work. And so, you know, I said it needs to be a sous chef who knows your style. And so someone who's cooked close with you on the line and probably run through some of the baskets and things like that so that they understand what the exam is, what the expectation is, how important it is, that you have to be surgically clean and organized in order to do well. And that's part of the exam as much as the cooking is the surgical precision of butchery and organization and setup, and that's going to give you what you need when you need it when you're cooking. You know, if your station is set up the same way every single day, if your salt containers and oil containers and whatever your personal program for organizing on the stove during plating and during prep, which are kind of three separate parts that each person needs to identify what those are. You know, certainly we can provide some resources of those things, but that's something that each person has to kind of evolve and develop on their own. And you do that through, you know, doing chef's tables and doing a lot of things in different places. And I feel like the more you cook in different places, the better that kit or that program becomes for each of those aspects of your cooking program. And so, you know, I really wanted them to be in charge of everything outside of the test. I even had them in charge of what I ate and if there was anything that needed to be got, you know, purchased from the store. You know, if you're traveling, you know, if you forget post-it notes or you're out of highlighters, any of those little things, I thought, I don't want to have to drive to the store. I don't want to, when I'm done with that section of the day, I want to get back to the hotel, dive right into tomorrow, really make sure that my program's tight, start developing the program for 2 days out, and make sure that I'm working as flawlessly and clean and organized as possible. And so any of those things, you know, oh, I forgot to get post-it notes or I can't find them, well, now I have to go to the store. So then you're breaking that rhythm of thought, and then you're riding to the store thinking about the test and all the things you need to do as soon as you get back. I didn't want to have any of those things to derail me. And so I really wanted them to take care of going to get me meals, because the first time that I took the test, I didn't really eat well. I lost, you know, I think 7 pounds over the 8 days, because I would eat when I got to it and not when I needed to, in order to give me the fuel and energy that I needed to, you know, to get through this endurance cooking program, which is why this is, you know, one of the hardest certification programs in the world, because not many others have this long of a run towards a goal. So, you know, if it's 8 days, you know, that's 8 straight days of cooking. And over that period of time, if you're not consuming nutrients and protein and carbohydrates in the right form, eventually that starts to affect your brain function slightly. If you're not hydrating, that's going to affect those quick decisions that you need to make. And so I realized that I first needed to really make sure that I was really taking care of myself. And I remember Brian Beelen telling me that he, after each day of the test, would go sprint for half a mile or something like that, or a mile, I can't remember exactly what it was, to burn the lactic acid out of his legs, because that's one of the first things that I think a lot of people don't realize till they're in that moment. It's one thing to do the run, you know, at your club or hotel or restaurant, but to be in that tense kitchen, which you're going to feel the tension for the first day or so until you get acclimated to the environment. If you're working out of a low boy, you're constantly doing, you know, you're constantly up and down and doing squats. And so the lactic acid builds up in your legs, and then you're cramping. And if you're not hydrating, it just leads to one problem after another.
Well, and it's an intense exam, right? Like, it's, yeah, exactly like you say, you're squatting, you're moving back and forth, you're cooking with intensity. You need to be cooking at a fast pace, or otherwise you're not going to be done. You've got a dog nipping at your butt all day. So so you build your own nutrition plan, and you actually had a long statement in my conversation with you about staying active and kind of building up some stamina and working on some basic fitness stuff prior.
Yeah,
to the test.
I did. I had been doing some duathlons and things like that in between, just in between exams, and I really thought, hey, what Brian mentioned is a great thing. You know, you've got to stay flexible and limber through this, and so if you're able to, you know, do some of that and focus on yourself and get yourself into, you know, a good rhythm of fitness prior to. Now, you don't have to go out and run a race, but the more flexible you are because of, you know, how agile you need to be over those days within a, you know, potentially a very, very hot kitchen, which in 2012, it was August and the AC was broken for the first four days in at CIA. So it was very hot. We had a lot of problems with people being dehydrated. And so, you know, all of that becomes a very necessary thing, in my opinion, that you are, you know, in good physical form, that you're healthy, and then you're able to maintain that throughout, you know, throughout the exam. I had my assistant have a protein shake and a piece of fruit ready every single morning for me, vitamins, cup of coffee, and I let them manage that. I would, you know, take that extra 15 minutes of sleep so that when I got out of the shower, you know, Joe had everything ready for me out in the living room so that I could just eat, go through my program one more time. We would walk through it and then head over to the school. And so it has to be your nutrition program.
Right. And that's a huge step in prevention as well, because nobody wants to be sick taking the test. Nobody wants to get the flu or catch a cold or, you know, and you're in such a stressful environment. The last thing you need are having, you know, any other complication in the mix of things.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't afford it. And it will consume you if you do. So all those preventative things, even when I came out of the kitchen every day, he had another protein shake and, you know, and water and a banana ready for me. And that's just what I was comfortable with. I knew how, my body reacted to the food that I built into my plan. I needed light but filling things that gave me energy in the morning, and I needed to recharge when I came out, and I needed to, you know, have something with some really substance and high carbs and protein at night before the next day. So I ate the same food every single day for all 8 days. But I was comfortable with that.
When you told me that, I took that one step further and I figured out that I was going to consume about 4,600 calories a day. So I actually had meals prepared for me and had them in my freezer back in the hotel. And, you know, in the morning I tried to consume, you know, about 3,000 calories. And in the evening I tried to consume about 1,500 to 1,600 calories, you know, like it was divvied up between two meals and I had a shake in the middle of the day. So I think the key, like you're saying, is to just figure out what works for you, and any step in the right direction, anything that you can take out of the mix, any guesswork that you can take out of it is going to be one less thing to worry about.
Absolutely. And this is all stuff that can be pushed over to that assistant, you know? So if you're not having to make any of that, you're not having to take 10 minutes to make a shake. You're not having to run out and get pasta at nighttime. That's more time you're logging in front of the computer, making sure that your program is right for the next day, you know.
Well, and the beauty is you can plan it ahead. It takes all the decision making out of any other unnecessary decision during that test, right? You get decision fatigue anyway, because you're trying to figure out if this is right. Do I put this protein? Am I going to put this protein with that starch? Do I want to prepare this, you know, this component for this dish? Am I going to be able to pull it off? And
yeah,
the last thing you need to be doing is deciding where you're going to get your toothpaste from.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that is a key position, in my opinion, just for that segment. We haven't even gotten into the other things that he or she can do, but managing your consumption of food and having it ready for you. You know, I even had Joe drive to the school every day. I didn't drive the car because I figured, you know, that's 10 more minutes I can read through my notes before I get there. You know, that's more time I can really stay absorbed in this exam. And that's where I needed my head to be, not distracted by someone who pulled out in front of me or the, you know, dog walking down the street or whatever it is. You know, those things, I really wanted to build a strong secondary position so that my only goal was the exam. You know, their involvement day to day was super key too. So besides the consumption of food, you know, bringing the totes into the school, you know, all those little things that you don't want to exert or shouldn't have to, because now you have someone else. If, you know, when I got there, we had China issues. So we had to hunt China sometimes. So I could rely on Joe to bring my totes in, and I could go look for the China that I was short. You know, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what curveball is going to be there that you didn't plan for. So having that extra person, you know, was great. I even lent Joe out to, you know, some of the other guys who didn't have an assistant to go help them hunt and gather. You know, going back to the hotel every single day, his job was to break down the toolboxes, resharpen the knives, put everything back where we had it, which is a step I'll get to in a minute. And then once the prep list and program was built for the next day, he would repack the boxes based off of tomorrow's program. So again, I never left my notes. I just stayed in there working on the recipes, working on, you know, assignments, plating component lists, whatever it was. So I never left that that mindset. You know, we made sure to rent a room that had an extra bedroom. So Joe slept in the living room, technically on a fold out. I took the actual room, so I had some seclusion and could just stay, you know, kind of in my head. And then we turned the entire living room basically into a storeroom. And so we got some collapsible plastic shelving from Lowe's, which we brought with us. And we set up the living room like a dry storage. One shelf had pastry, one shelf was all the knives, one shelf was glazing tools, one shelf was international pans that I might need, paella pans, things like that, etc., consomme pots, so that everything had its place. So there's never a question of, oh, where are my plate wipes, where is this, where is that. We had everything organized and laid out, so when we went for the next day, it was easy to just pick what we needed, or him mostly, you know. But that was the routine. Every day we come back to the hotel, he would break the boxes down all the way, clean them out, wipe everything down, sanitize, and then repack it. Obviously, there's things, you know, that you're going to need every single day, plate wipes and your plating setup, which is utensils usually, and you know, any type of socle folds or artichoke folds or anything like that. But he was able to kind of have that stuff pre-ready, because you know when classical's coming, you know when buffet catering's coming, you know when pastry's coming. So some of those things based off of the menu, which were locked in, he already knew that this was labeled for pastry, for nutritional, etc. So he was able to easily pack those things. But yeah, that was key. I never had to step away other than to double check and to walk through some things with him. But it took a ton of time away from me doing things that I shouldn't have been or didn't want to be doing. I wanted to focus on the test.
I think it's better to keep it simple. You have what you need. Keep it simple, but keep it consistent. I found consistency. You know, having the same spoon setup or the same stovetop setup every day during the test was really helpful. You know, just to take any of that guesswork out, and keeping it simple, keeping it consistent, and then you can look at the tray before you leave the hotel and say, okay, look, I'm set or I'm not set. What's that missing?
Right, exactly. You know, minor things change there. You know, it just if there's one day where, you know, like I said, if it's classical, you're probably going to need some sort of linen fold. If it's not, you probably don't need them. So minor things change, but like you said, in one of the resources that we'll throw up on the resources tab is just that, a list of not only cooking items but also plating items, just as an example of what worked for me. You know, and there might be a lot of stuff on there for some people. It might be overkill, but they were things that I knew I was going to use at some point. You know, having a finishing tray, and what is a finishing tray, and things like that that were the same every single day, and there might be slight variation, obviously depending on what kind of cuisine you're cooking, But repetition is the key, because it's once you get into that groove of what your station is and how you can go anywhere and set up your station the way that you set it up, the way that works for you, and cook just like you're in your favorite kitchen. That's when you really start to hit the ground running with your what you have dialed in. And it's not something that happens quickly. It's not something that I could take, you know, yours, Jerry, and try to make it work for me, because it wouldn't work for me, and vice versa. And I think that's where sometimes people start to get a little bit lost in the initial steps of approaching the exam, as they watch someone do it and they think, well, I'll do it exactly the same way. And then it starts to throw them off, because that's not where your, you know, utensil bin is most comfortable, or you're left-handed, or whatever it is. So, you know, while it helps to start with a rough idea of maybe these are things I need in order to get through my process, you really have to feel that out time and time again to decide how that program works best. And sometimes that's something that you tweak inevitably for forever. I know, you know, as you know, being on the team, you know, those things change drastically again when you shift gears to that. So, but it is a necessary thing to be able to step in, step to the stove, and put out your best food is having that program in place and having it airtight.
I think I've recognized that that's a big misunderstanding in preparing for the test. It seems to me candidates, or people who would like to be considered candidates, or who are working to be candidates for the test, assume that there's a specific way to cook a dish, or there's a specific right way to set up a station. And it's the exact opposite of that. That's true. It's your style. It's who you are as a culinarian. There's certain metrics that need to be met. And of course, you need to be clean. You need to be sanitary. And there's certain characteristics of paella, for example, that you have to nail in order to have a good paella. But the micromanaging of it, that's on you. That's up to the culinarian. And I think that it's such a great point to make, to say, look, you know, this is how I set up my stove. How you set up your stove is really up to you, but maybe you should think about having cartouches on your station, or maybe you should think about having salt and pepper. Do you have enough spoons? This is what I do, but it's so individualized. It's such a personal test, and that personal style just really should show through in the program.
Absolutely. You know, that's the one thing I think a lot of people try to force. You know, I was guilty of that in some of my early runs as well, as trying to cook what I thought someone wanted versus what I wanted. And you have to really love food. You know, you have to really love every aspect of what you're going to go to this exam and cook, and be excited to show off every single one of those things, whether it's matambre or whether it is your, you know, best salmon appetizer for freestyle, or whether it's a consomme that someone else pulls for you that you're really excited that you're going to make consomme for your colleagues. Those things have to be, it has to be an act of love. And if it's not, it will come through in the food. And I know we say that all the time in the industry, you know, cook from your heart, etc. But all of it has to be second nature as well. You know, it's not a time to go there to work through those things. If you're not 100% comfortable with force meats and those things, those are the things that need to be worked on prior, you know. And I've said a few times, like, that is where I think that more needs to be focused, is really falling in love with what you're going to put out. You know, if it's pastry, if it's healthy cooking, all those things, you have to build your program and do what you want with the food you're given, following the parameters, but being really proud of what you're about to put out, and not just trying to check a box, because it becomes really, really obvious, you know, as an evaluator, to see that happen. And I know in the tasting room as well, we want to see, you know, you take the parameters and what's in the basket and really just leave a lasting impression, just like you would do in your restaurant or club or hotel. And I know sometimes that's easier said than done when you look at this and how big it is and trying to get your arms around it for the first time. But if you put out food that you're proud of, and that you're excited about and it tastes good and it's executed well every single day, you're going to be successful. If you're super tight with your confidence in your station setup and you're not running frantically looking for things, you're going to be successful. But it's just as much of it as it is a test of mastering cooking fundamentals. It's a mastery of organization as well, and communication, because you're communicating with your other colleagues here and there. You're communicating a lot with your apprentice, who is there to learn essentially. And we want to see that interaction. And, you know, the hope is that those apprentices for the exam, become a candidate someday, and this inspires them. So it's an education for them to work through this with a potential candidate. And I think those things need to be focused on just as much.
Thank you for tuning in. We're going to use this as an opportunity to pause. And we'll be back with the next episode next week. Join us then.
On behalf of AMCO, I would like to thank everyone for listening today.
This podcast has been recorded in association with South Bend Equipment, Winco Equipment, Colorado Mills Sunflower Oil, and is part of the AMCO American Master Chef Order.
This will be an ongoing series going forward. If you heard any topics today that you would like us to expand upon on a future episode, please feel free to contact us with questions or topics.
Please subscribe or share if any of this information has impacted you in a positive way. I'd like to thank you very much for your participation in joining us in. I invite you to stay tuned in to the AMCO podcast. Soon, we'll be launching a monthly panel discussion in regards to the MasterChef exam. Looking forward to sharing more with you. Have a great day.
You can reach us at podcast@AmericanMasterChefsOrder.org. Thank you.